This is Beyond Busy. I'm Graham Alcott. I'm the author of a number of books, including the global bestseller How to Be a Productivity Ninja, and I'm the founder of Think Productive. We work with some of the world's leading companies to help people get stuff done, but more importantly, to help people to make space for what matters. Beyond Busy is where I explore the often messy truths and contradictory relationships around topics like work-life balance, happiness and success, and explore with interesting people what makes them tick. In short, this is where we ask the bigger questions about work. My guest today is Jackie Weaver. She is the chief executive of the Cheshire Association of Local Councils, but probably best known for the online attention she received when the Hanforth Parish Council meeting went viral earlier on this year. And in this episode, we talk about becoming an overnight internet sensation. We shed a bit more light on local council meetings in the UK and how they're supposed to work. And we also talk about just generally the importance of meetings and how we can all improve our online meetings. This is Jackie Weaver. I'm with Jackie Weaver. Good afternoon.
Hello there.
It's lovely to have you on, and I know you've been very much in demand over the last few weeks. So we're going to talk about the reason for that being in demand, which is this clip that has gone viral around the internet and turned you into somewhat of a star, maybe a reluctant star. So let's start with when did you first find out that it had gone viral? Because the famous meeting was back in December. And then it didn't go viral until the February. So when did you first find out that something was happening?
Literally that day, that night. Somebody sent, don't forget, by now, Hanforth is but a bit of memory. We've had Christmas in between. Work's back to back to COVID normal, and onwards and upwards. So I've never really been much into IT. I mean, I use IT for work. I mean, everybody has to, don't they? But I have a Twitter account. I think it might have had 5 followers or something. I never use it. Never did use it, to be honest. And then somebody sent me something that said I was trending number 3 in the country, which is just a foreign language. It meant absolutely nothing to me at all. And I was even less worried when I was told a little bit later that I was trending number 1, because again, it meant nothing. Until the following day, this was on the evening of the Thursday, and my phone had was full of messages. My inbox was, I'm someone who likes to keep tight control over email. And now I'd got 350 unanswered emails.
Yeah.
And a very nice young reporter knocking on the door.
And
with
who
3
was the
more
first
standing
reporter?
Behind him.
Who was first on the scene?
It was an independent.
Oh, right.
And I say with 3 more behind him, just queued up waiting. So incredibly weird, because I'm still trying to think at this point, what have I missed? What is the fuss? As the day wore on, I began to they filled me in basically on why I was famous in that moment.
Yeah, and I guess the meeting sort of owes its fame to, there was a guy called, is it Sam, who put it all together. He kind of edited the highlights of the meeting together from the Zoom recording.
Well,
so they're all publicly available there. Is that how parish councils work?
Yeah, well, not all. There's no specific protocol for what you do with the Zoom recording if you record your meetings. But a lot of them do, in fact, publish them as soon as they've been recorded. And I imagine it had been on there for a little. Well, clearly it had been on there for some time.
Yeah.
And yes, it was two politics students, very young politics students down in London. Okay. Arlie being interested in the politics aspect, and his friend actually put together the video you saw.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it captured imaginations.
So there's a whole bunch of characters in there, and there's Julie's iPad is very famous.
Oh, quite,
at one point,
yes.
And so on and so forth. What do you think it was that really captured people's attention about it? I mean, you must have had the questions from all the journalists as they've asked you about it. What's been the main theme of that you think people were so fascinated with?
My take on it is that I think there's something inherent in us that makes us want to see fairness. I think if you think about all the injustices you've seen, you know, somebody cutting in front of you at traffic, we're not talking about huge world-changing things here, you know, where you didn't get the pay rise at work, where somebody was rude and they got away with it, all those kind of things, and we put up with them all the time. And in that moment, I think what you saw was justice. I think that's my take on it. Either that or I've just become the nation's favourite grandmother.
I think the other thing that comes across as a sort of subtext or underlying theme is you've got these two guys, I think two or three guys who are being very bullying and domineering, and you know, at one point they're kind of shouting at you, read the standing orders and so on. Mm. And you kept very calm in that moment. And I wonder if there's a part of the appeal of it is something to do with, you know, number one, a very kind of British calm response in the face of this, you know, very stressful situation. But also whether there's a, you know, it feels to me like there's an awful lot of people, and particularly women out there, who've experienced that kind of bullying behaviour. And you're almost like an icon for those people. So do you feel like a kind of anti-bullying icon, or maybe a feminist icon?
I mean, I would have said 3 months ago, absolutely not. but because I really thought we'd come an awful lot further than we seem to have done. I mean, certainly I live in a very rural part of the country, Cheshire, Shropshire border. Most of the people I engage with treat me with respect, you know, like 99.9%. I mean, you know, possibly not played out at Handforth, but there you go. Mm-hmm. So my experience is that, you know, I feel like an equal. I never challenged it. It's been many, many years since I've challenged it. And my assumption was that's the same for everybody. But what I got was a shed load of emails and messages through Twitter, etc., saying that's not other people's experience.
Yeah.
And that, just as you said, other women have experienced the same kind of hostility that you saw at Handforth in the workplace. And I thought we were done with that.
Mm. Yeah.
Why aren't we?
Well, why? Yeah. I mean, why aren't we? And it does feel like, I don't know whether there's certain industries, whether the culture in certain industries tolerates that kind of, you know, hectoring, bullying, shouting kind of behavior and culture more than in, you know, other parts of the world. I don't know, but it does feel like, you know, maybe one of the results of your video going viral is that people are talking about behavior, ooh, right? Ooh. A bit more, and talking about some of the things that, you know, perhaps we need to draw a line on and say, you know, these are just not acceptable behaviours in work. And, you know, this is how we respect versus this is how we don't respect.
And I mean, if you look at the strides that have been made through, you know, HR, that kind of thing, you would again have thought that these things were totally eradicated just through the system of, you know, looking after staff at work.
Yeah.
Clearly not.
There's probably an awful lot of people listening to this right now who have bad bosses who are saying, oh, no, there's still plenty more to do. I suppose the big question that everybody has been asking you is the famous one of, did you have the authority? I wanted to just drill into that. So it felt to me like there was no ambiguity about whether you had the moral authority, right? You were being shouted at, you're being treated in this kind of way, and, you know, somebody had to take a stand there and say, right, we're going to throw these people out of the Zoom call and just, you know, calm down and so on. That just felt very clear, like there's a moral authority there. But, like, technically you weren't a counsellor, right? So I'd love to just explain that a bit more. So you were brought in because the history of this was the meeting hadn't happened in quite a while, and then you were brought in to kind of help some of the other councillors to run the meeting. Is that right?
Not exactly. A council meeting can be called in one of three ways. The clerk can call a meeting, the chairman can call a meeting, and if neither of those do those in a prescribed period of time, then two councillors can call for a meeting. Yeah. The chairman had unilaterally suspended the clerk and made himself clerk.
Right.
Okay. So the two councillors went through the usual process of writing to him in his capacity as clerk, writing to him in his capacity as chairman, and then, of course, he would not call the meeting.
So you're supposed to write to two people, but he made himself the clerk so that he was the only person that you could write to.
But due process, you know, I mean, there's nothing in the legislation that says that they have to be two separate people. So, you know, they followed. I mean, and again, for me, I feel very strongly about following the rules should give you a reward. Yeah. Right. And breaking them should bring a punishment. and so these two councillors had gone through the proper procedure to call a meeting. And, of course, they have none of the infrastructure in place to call a meeting. The chairman stroke clerk has taken control of the Zoom password and everything like that.
Right, yeah.
He's certainly not going to clerk the meeting for them. So the organisation that I work for, the Cheshire Association of Local Councils, we provide training, advice, support, guidance, whatever a council needs across the whole of Cheshire. Yes. And it's not unusual for a council to need admin support on an evening. The clerk might be poorly, clerk might be on holiday, a clerk might have been suspended by the chairman 3 months ago. And that was why I was there, simply to facilitate the meeting. If you actually watch the rest of the video, you'll see that you hear virtually nothing from me the rest of the meeting.
Yeah.
It's not what I'm there for. Yeah. I'm there to enable them to have their meeting. But the question of did I have the authority to remove them from the meeting comes up all the time. In my opinion, yes. And I'm not talking about the moral authority. When you listen to the chairman, he first of all refers to standing orders. Standing orders only apply when the council is sitting. He tells us twice that the council hasn't started sitting yet.
And you're saying to him, can we actually start the meeting?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
So that these things can apply.
Yeah. He's been given every opportunity to have the post treated with respect, because the chairman is a role that demands respect, and to carry on with the meeting.
Hmm.
But is determined to make this announcement that the meeting is unlawful.
Yeah.
So at that point, I think we're going for the Public Bodies Admissions to Meeting Act 1966. And we're saying, you are disruptive, leave the meeting.
Hmm. And that is in this, because I did actually read the standing orders before this.
Yeah.
And there is a section there about the conduct of councillors, right? And so if someone is acting in a way that is offensive, then they should be expelled.
Yeah. However, the standing orders don't make any reference to what you do if the person disrupting the meeting is actually the chairman.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, does that not apply because he's also a councillor? So he's a member as well.
No, because, oh gosh, are we really discussing standing orders?
I want to get to the bottom of, did you have the authority? Yeah. This is the key question.
But standing orders won't help you because the meeting hadn't been started.
Right. Okay. So that's really the answer to the question is you were in a Zoom chat with a bunch of people rather than in the middle of a formal meeting.
Yeah. And a little bit later, as in a moment or two later, the councillors themselves formally ratify that they don't want those people back in the meeting.
Yeah. So really it was them, not you, that made the ultimate decision for the chairman to be ejected.
Because they're in the waiting room and I say, you know, do you want me to invite them back in? And they didn't even take a breath before they said no. Who can blame
was that? Was that the first and last time you were involved in that capacity with Handforth Council, or had you supported meetings with them before?
Oh no, I've known Handforth for 9 years.
Right. Okay. So you knew all of those characters beforehand, and you knew some of the backstory of what you were walking into.
Definitely.
Yeah. So the last few weeks.
Sorry, that's why I went rather than asking a member of staff to go.
Yeah. Fair enough. So the last few weeks, you've been in the spotlight. Just a quick search on YouTube, and I found you on Good Morning Britain with Piers Morgan, and on BBC Breakfast and Channel 4, and just all over the media doing various different interviews and stuff. How have you found that? So presumably that was just all a huge whirlwind that just blew up that evening when you found out that you were trending on Twitter. Just how's it been over the last few weeks?
I kind of feel I'm supposed to say it's been surreal or confusing or frightening or out of control or whatever. But it hasn't really felt like that. I mean, it has just felt like a real opportunity that has to be just grabbed.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've been trying to get local councils noticed in some meaningful way all of my career in local government, and that's 25 years. So somebody comes along and knocks on your door and says to you, tell me about local councils. What's all this about? What do you say? Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm busy. No.
And I guess your job within that is to shine the spotlight on the importance of government at its most local levels, and arguably sometimes at its least glamorous levels too, right? So when people think of local councils and parish councils, they think of rubbish collections and allotments and, you know, the real kind of day-to-day details and stuff. But I suppose your job is to make that stuff accessible to people without, obviously, the story of that meeting being an alienating one, right? So a lot of people would watch that and go, why would I get involved in that? I'm just going to get shouted at and it's going to be chaotic and so on. So how do you sort of square that circle? Like what have you been finding is the useful way into telling the positive story of local government?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was probably the thing that I was most anxious about, that people would, and the press and the media and everything would just focus on the negative. It has not been my experience.
That's good.
Yeah. It's been, I think very often journalists get a kind of bad press for wanting to tell a bad story. I can't think of what the word is really, rather than a positive one. And again, that hasn't been my experience. My experience has been, we've talked a bit about the bad behaviour, sexism, feminism, all those kind of things. And then we've gone on to talk about how important it is that you get involved and change it.
Yeah.
And whether you're getting involved to change it because the behaviour has offended you, or because you think, well, actually, we've got a parish council, but it doesn't seem to do very much here, get involved so that it does something. Mm. I mean, as some people have asked me, you know, is it time that we change local government? Should it look like something different? Does it need modernising? No, it just needs a using, you know?
And do you think so?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I guess my impression is lots of things tend to be very, very slow. And I suppose my observation, not having had a huge amount of experience with it, but I've been involved in some meetings, you know, meetings of local councillors down here in Brighton and so on. And I guess my impression is that often it takes an awful lot of effort expended to get often quite small things done. And it doesn't necessarily work that efficiently. But I don't know if is that just a consequence of democracy and you need a lot of consensus, or like are there systematic things that we could change, do you think?
I think there's a couple of things there. I think one, you're probably talking about a district council. And when you get to district and county council level, then you get involved in politics. And there's something about politics, I think, that kind of slows stuff down. That's my opinion. Doesn't matter what party it is. But at local council level, town and parish council level, few of them are political creatures. And they really are about local people coming together with the ability to raise tax so they've got money to bring these plans that they have into fruition. And we're only talking about one parish. We're talking about one geographic area. So you can really make a difference, and you can make a difference before you get to 90. sometimes they need help with it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, can they do better? Of course they can. Can we streamline things? Of course we can. But that's really about interpretation, that there's nothing in our legislation that means that this has to take months. It has to be agreed, democracy, point you made, but it doesn't have to take a small lifetime.
Yeah, that's good to know. I suppose the other thing that I wanted to ask you about, just on that similar theme, is just about how, like, the job that you do day to day. So you're the chief officer of Cheshire Association of Local Councils. You don't just deal with Handforth, of course, you deal with, you know, a couple of hundred different councils. I'm guessing that there's, in terms of the age spread of the people who get involved in that, like, they tend to be, you know, of an older generation. There aren't as many younger people engaged. What do you think we need to do differently to get, you know, 18-year-olds, 21-year-olds involved in that level of local government?
Okay. Why do we want to engage 18 to 21-year-olds?
So that we've got a good spread of people across that represent everybody.
But this particular community is full of people who are 70 to 95.
Right, okay, yeah.
Okay, the trouble is that we talked
about... outside of Handforth, is that not something that you find?
I wasn't talking about Handforth particularly. Yeah. In fact, Handforth is younger, and if you look at the spread of councillors on Handforth... the demographic isn't that bad. Yes, they're older, but they're not 80.
Yeah.
But we tend to look at, we tend to have this conversation around the council that we see in our mind and assume that that's exactly the same in every area. And it's not.
Yeah.
Some of our councils are wonderfully representative. We have two councils in Cheshire where the mayor of the town was under 21.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So, you know, kind of feel like that box has been ticked in some councils. But you're absolutely right in that there are certainly areas where the representation of different bodies within the parish or town could be improved. But that's about getting involved.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of presentations these days to young people. A lot of universities and a lot of schools and colleges. And they kind of always take it from the position of the council should want to come and get me. Mm-hmm. And I offer, well, go get them.
Yeah.
You know, how does the council...
That's life, right? I mean, that's anything in life. Yeah.
How does the council know you're interested? How does the council know what you've got to offer? Over the years, we've tried a number of initiatives across the country to try and encourage young people to get involved. So we have the Youth Parliament. A lot of councils created youth councils. And all that happened was that we ended up with youth councils that looked like mini-me's. Now, that's not all of them. I'm sure some of them were extremely representative. But some that I know were kind of like older people in young clothes. So engaging with young people is difficult.
Yeah.
And actually some of it needs to come from the young people.
Yeah.
Some
is there another... So I guess people have asked you before about getting young people involved. Is there another group that you think is really underrepresented? Like, are people my age just working and therefore too busy? Or is there real problems with, you know, black people getting involved? Or, like, you know, are there other groups that you feel like are more underrepresented?
I think we have the same underrepresentation as you would talk about in the rest of the country. Yeah. One of the things that you may be aware of is that on the 7th of May, we note the coronavirus regulations come to an end, and it means that we no longer have the ability to hold virtual meetings.
Right.
And we found that over this last year, one of the positives out of COVID has been that actually we're beginning to see greater involvement by more people in local council meetings because of the accessibility. Mm. And one of the issues for young people like yourself, although not in the 18 to 21 bracket.
I wouldn't put myself in the young bracket personally. But
still young to me, Graham, is that you do work. And consequently, you know, not only do you work, but you might also have care commitments at one end of the scale or the other.
Yeah.
So being able to participate in virtual meetings, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that it's interesting, isn't it, how some of those things that become, they start out as everyone views them as poor substitutes, but actually a lot of these things end up having real benefits to them and you know, side effects that we want to try and hold on to in some way. Let's talk a bit more about meetings then. You were really kind enough to give an endorsement for my book with Hayley Watts, How to Fix Meetings. And so, yeah, just want to say thank you for
You're welcome for
doing that. And I feel like getting an endorsement on a book about how to run meetings from the Jackie Weaver. I mean, you know, like I feel pretty honoured. So I want to say thank you for that. Let's just talk about, you've obviously seen a lot of meetings. I'd love to just hear some thoughts from you on what you think makes a good meeting.
I guess for me, and I come from a particular place over meetings, for me, meetings are about making decisions. My frustration with some council meetings is they're often viewed as an opportunity for an exchange of information. And I guess that there has to be some information sharing, of course, because you need something on which to base your decision. And you need some information sharing because it's kind of like a fabulous, kind of like glue that puts us together, that forms a relationship.
Yeah.
But after that, it's kind of like, you know, why are we here? This is not a social event. Let's get these decisions taken so we can move forward so that decisions of the council can happen without it taking 4 years to come to fruition.
Yeah.
Because it's that lack of decision making that takes those issues 4 years to be resolved. They don't need to be.
Yeah. And I find that, you know, when I talk to some of our clients in businesses as well, there's definitely a sense that meetings often start without a clear vision of how do we know when we're finished, right?
Yes.
Like, what's the end point here? What are we trying to, like you say, what are we trying to decide? Because, you know, ultimately you want to come away with something that is, you know, like a tangible outcome that is better than what you had at the start, right? But often if people get just sucked into information sharing and, you know, and debating, but without reaching a conclusion, it kind of feels to me like a lot of that could have just been done on email back at people's desks, right?
Absolutely.
Rather than being in a meeting. Let's talk about difficult people. So one of the things on the viral video, obviously, was, and maybe this is a benefit of Zoom, is that you could press the, you know, the eject button and people could be in the meeting room. If you were in a meeting where it wasn't on Zoom and it was in the, you know, the local town hall or something like that, obviously those people would still be in the room. So what I'd love to hear about is how, over the years, how do you deal with difficult people, you know, in the room? And what are some of the tactics and strategies that people can kind of adopt to deal with difficult people?
In the case of Handforth, I knew that they would be difficult. And I wouldn't have done a face-to-face meeting with them without the PCSO present. It's certainly an option if you think that a council meeting is going to be really disruptive because you want to make sure that people are safe. And if your PCSO isn't there, then if you can't get them to leave, then you leave because your safety is more important than anything else. How I deal with difficult people depends on how many of them are difficult. I guess one of the most challenging ones would be where there were actually two factions in the council, quite a big council, yeah. So about 18 councillors. And it was impossible to even set the ground rules. So in the end, I made them sit one side of the table and the other sit on the other side of the table, and then decided on which side of the table we would talk or could talk back at any one time. Not allowed to talk to each other.
Wow.
That was a hard night.
And do you feel like, you know, if you've got one difficult person, is it more about how to, you know, bring people back to the purpose of the meeting or bring people back to the ground rules or something as a way of, you know, kind of shutting down that person's behaviour? Is that something that you'd look to do?
I teach chairmanship as part of our training programme for local councillors, because I think often meetings are unsuccessful because of poor chairmanship.
Mm.
And for me, it's about not, first of all, understanding why that person's difficult. I mean, often, you know, when you get to the bottom of it, the person is difficult because they don't agree with you. Okay, that's not difficult. That's someone who doesn't agree with you. Okay.
Yeah.
But if literally you can't shut them up, then, you know, why don't you agree as a group beforehand how you are going to manage this meeting?
Hmm.
You know, it's like when you're doing a training session and you start off with a group of people and you know it's going to be something like planning. Local councils love planning. So you're going to do a training planning session, and this is down for 2 hours and has the potential to be 17 hours with no break. So we start off with, look, you know, do you want to go home at 4 o'clock today, or do you want to spend the night here? What's your choice?
Yeah.
Okay. And keep reinforcing the message over and over through this session. Till in effect, what happens is the other people start to join in. So yeah. They'll start to self-regulate.
Right. Yeah.
But that message of what it is that you're trying to achieve has to be pushed over and over again.
Yeah. It sort of brings me back to one of the things that's in my book, which is the idea of the 40-20-40 principle. So focusing 40% of your attention on what happens before the meeting, 20% on the meeting itself, and then 40% on the follow through.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I really learned from a guy called Martin Farrell, who was one of my trustees when I ran a charity, and he's a facilitator who does a lot of work with the UN and Fair Trade Foundation and various different bodies like that. But the amount of pre-conversations that he would have, particularly with people that he knew had strong opinions or might be difficult, to just kind of ascertain, okay, what do you want to get out of this? What's the, you know, and just do all that work beforehand so that by the time you get into the meeting, you've already either smoothed the way a little bit because those people feel listened to, or you've got a really good sense of where it might go, where it's probably not going to go. And, you know, and it just kind of reduces the number of surprises, and that really has stuck with me as a way to think about some of those bigger meetings that I have. If I'm facilitating or chairing something, it's like, you know, being able to just like lay that groundwork and preparation with the difficult people beforehand as well.
I mean, I guess that takes me back to Handforth, not in a PTSD kind of way, but I guess one of the things people often ask me is, how did I manage to stay calm? And for me, that was about being very focused on what I was trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And I only had one thing I was trying to achieve that night, and that was to make the meeting happen. Mm. So for me, focus was easy because, you know, everything else was really just noise. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. Do you have any other what are the other tips and tricks you've learned over the years for just managing meetings in general?
I mean, sometimes that it's the really mundane stuff that makes the biggest difference, like, you know, shuffling the chairs. Have you noticed how councillors in particular, although to be honest, it also happens in church, everyone has their own seat and help you if you sit in somebody's seat. What's that about? let's move that round, because they're too comfortable sat where they are.
Yeah.
And they've already positioned themselves so that they've got, they know where their allies are, they know where the challenges are. Well, let's make them feel a little bit more, a little less comfortable than they do.
Mm.
The other thing is, often you have a council meeting in a horseshoe. So many of the councillors are sat with their back towards the public. That doesn't work.
Mm.
No. So change the way in which you've got your seats laid out. And, you know, insist. It's your year of chairmanship. You can shuffle the chairs if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a training once about chairing meetings, and the exercise that always really stuck with me, and it kind of ended up in the book, actually, was this exercise where we started out with a table and a boardroom, and we just all sat down, and it was like, how does this feel? And then we did it where everyone was in, like, theatre style with someone at the front. And then we did it where everyone was in a horseshoe. And then we did it at the end where everyone was in a circle with no table. And it suddenly felt like, you know, a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or a counselling group or something. And it's like just the different dynamics. And no one had spoken at this point. Just the different dynamics of what does that experience feel like to walk into a room, you know, in that way. Makes a huge difference, which again comes back to the sort of preparation thing, right? It's like thinking those kind of things through about where the public are going to sit or whether people are going to be in factions and all of that. Like, if you can think that through and align it to your purpose, then you set the mundanities up to serve your purpose. They're actually they're subtle and actually not that mundane at that point, right? They're actually playing a role.
Cool.
Yeah. Before we move on from meetings and handforth, has it sort of been resolved now? So, like, are those people all talking to each other? Is it still in a state of conflict? Can you even say that? I don't know what I'm allowed to ask you on that.
You can ask. I'll tell you what I know. certainly in terms of you know, have we been in touch? Then no. I don't expect the three councillors to get in touch with me at all. The chairman is determined to clear his name with the world. He's produced his own video that explains all the reasons why. He just wanted to get across a simple message that the meeting was unlawful.
Right.
I don't think he gets kind of like the bigger picture, but there we go. Certainly Alan's iPad, I'm sure, remains completely unrepentant. The chairman of personnel, Councillor Burkle, had a motion of no confidence proposed because he's also the borough council mayor.
Okay.
And that's gone into the system to be investigated. But all three councillors are under investigation for previous behaviour.
Right, okay.
And the outcome hasn't been decided yet.
Okay, so, probably that's enough to say on that one. Then.
Except that the video evidence is quite damning.
Indeed. So just over the last few weeks, obviously you've embraced this opportunity, and I think you've done a great job of just bringing to, you know, more public view just the whole idea of getting involved. And I think that's a really inspiring message. I remember a while ago having two friends of mine who were debating politics from sort of opposite sides of the political spectrum, and at the end one of them said, well, yeah, that's what we think about it, but like I've just stood to be a councillor, like, what are you actually doing about all this? You know, I think there's something about your message of just, well, take action, don't let them find you, just go, you know, go out there and find what you want to help with. I think that's a really inspiring message. Do you think there's been, so that's been, you know, a real upside of I guess this whole thing. Do you think there's been any downsides for you personally just over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I haven't had a weekend off in ages. or an evening, actually, for that matter.
Or an evening, yeah. Yes. So it's been just relentless for, you know, since that explosion in February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the trouble is, so much of it is just stuff you really want to do. But it's like, I guess for me, one frustration is that each kind of organisation doesn't have a central body that you can talk to. So if you want to talk to Young Labour, you have to talk to Young Labour, north, south, east, west, in the middle, on the edges, young female Labour. I'm sure there must be a young male Labour somewhere. You know, it seems very fragmented from the outside.
Right.
The same is true of the other parties. I'm not singling Labour out in particular. So it means that you've got to just keep doing the same message over and over again.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, kind of frustrating. It's, you know, it would be great if there was kind of like one place that you could go and talk and have a kind of conversation with people in that way.
Yeah, or, you know, whether you could have a huge, you know, sort of conference on this stuff where everyone can just come together at the same time rather than you have to talk to lots of smaller groups. So work-life balance has been an issue, which is one of the things we talk about a lot here on Beyond Busy. So this might be totally the wrong time to ask you this, but how do you kind of switch off and just stay sane and stay grounded in amongst all of this?
Who says I do any of those things?
Yeah. That's why I said it might be the wrong time to ask if you've not had a weekend and so on.
Grounding comes from work for me. So as well as all the stuff like I'm doing with Yourself Today, Graham, as well as that, I have all the natural work stuff. And in Cheshire, it's a bit like family. So, you know, family are never impressed by you. Okay. So you're just mum, you know, and that's kind of like Cheshire. So that, you know, I'm with family, and they, you know, we have all the normal work that we do. So I'll go from perhaps talking to you to doing 2 hours chairmanship training, with a group of councillors from Cheshire. So I guess that's very grounding.
And so it hasn't affected when you're doing those trainings as you would have done before this thing went viral. It hasn't affected that kind of work. So you're not now... We're having training with the famous Jackie Weaver. Like, do you think it sort of affects the
vibe
at all? No.
Nope. A couple of people, you know, do the, but often it'll be me that picks it up, you know, say something like, yeah, we're going to get out the standing orders. Yeah, you've read them and understood them. You know, the usual things. I find sometimes it's better to just hit it myself than it is to wait for them to, because I know that somebody's going to say it. But no, I'm still just Jackie here.
Nice. And you mentioned something at the beginning that I thought, oh, I need to log that one and come back to it, which was your management of emails. Because the other thing we talk about a lot on Beyond Busy is productivity, which is obviously my background too. So what's your approach to email, and then what's your approach just generally to productivity and getting stuff done?
3 months ago, my approach to emails would be that if you had any left in your in tray at the end of the day, it's a failure.
Yes! Love that answer.
Since then...
Now you're going to...
It's been incredible for me. Yeah. I mean, you know, because that for me is a huge challenge, because I have to let that go. I have to let it go. Because I am just never getting to the end of my inbox.
How many do you get a day right now?
150.
Okay. You just need some productivity ninja hacking skills.
And of course, the trouble is, some of them for work, as in day job work, and some interesting. So. I now just look at the new ones and then just leave a few in the inbox at the bottom and file the rest.
Okay.
You can hear the guilt in my voice.
But my sense is you're going to get back to the full-on inbox zero, right? That's, you're going to return to it.
I don't like stuff undone.
Yeah.
My colleague at work, I mean, this sounds so pathetic. My colleague at work has a very messy desktop. I mean, screen. And any time I have to use her machine, it's all I can do not to tidy it up for her.
Right. Yeah,
but I respect the boundaries.
Yeah.
I leave it alone. And then
in your mind, yeah, you're moving everything yeah around.
You see, if you just put that over yeah there and that there and that there, move that, yeah, sorted. And nice. My desktop had got really messy, had probably about 50 files on it. So I filed them all and I felt better about it because yeah it's now a clear, as is my desk, always clear.
Completion and clarity. It's one of those things I talk a lot to people about multitasking and how multitasking is, it's a bit of a myth and it's a bit of a misnomer because, you know, you can do something physical and think about something, but you can't really think about two things at the same time.
No.
So if you're involved in two different, you know, work projects that involve thinking, what you're really doing is just refocusing from one thing to another really quickly and getting distracted. And what I often find is when people have got, you know, 50 different things on their desktop, the reason it feels really nice when you clear that stuff up is because suddenly you've got all that attention to be able to focus again. You know, you can monotask, you can focus on one thing, and, you know, just clearing up some of those things on the periphery. It's a bit like what we were talking about before with the small things can be the big things. You know, sometimes when you do that little bit of kind of clearing up, it just adds so much power to the one thing that you really do want to focus on.
I'm also a big list maker. I don't mean the lists are necessarily big, but for me, there's something quite, and I prefer to write them by hand.
Yeah.
So I like to write a list of things that I want to achieve today. And then I always make sure that I've got something on there that I can do.
Nice. Yeah.
Because there's a tick. Well, I like a tick.
Yes. Ticking things off. So it sounds like control is a really important thing with that. Like you want to feel like you're managing stuff and that you've got, you know, good grounding on what you're working on.
Yeah, but it's kind of also my head is very busy. And I can feel overload. And when I feel that, when I feel that I'm no longer really able to capture what it is that I'm thinking about, that's when I start to write it down.
Yeah.
Because I do get overwhelmed. And I don't find that a comfortable place to be at all. It feels out of control.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those really easy things that people can do is if you're ever just feeling stressed and overwhelmed, just get everything out of your head. Mm. You know, just write it all down, just start to make sense of it. And just, I think everything just feels better once you do that. Is there anything else that's your, any kind of little Jackie Weaver secrets to productivity?
Oh, golly. Not really. I mean, I find that I'm very kind of focused on, oh, I know what I do. I put things off until they're important. The standard joke used to be yeah at work, we had a monthly newsletter and I hated doing the newsletter. Yeah. I don't know why. It wasn't hard. It wasn't particularly time consuming. I just had it in my mind. I hated doing it. So I would always put myself under pressure at the end of the month to do this newsletter.
Yeah.
It was never late, but only when it was, oh, my God, it's going to be done tomorrow, could I persuade myself to actually start typing something. I don't know why. I still haven't worked that out.
So the trick is leave things until the last minute and then you get the momentum of extrinsic motivation, right? Like the need to make sure it's done to the deadline.
I guess there's some sort of, if there's no deadline for me, I'll fill in with other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do find it incredibly difficult to say no.
Yeah. I guess that must have been particularly interesting in the last few weeks where you've had so many requests to do so many things. Have you changed how you, have you developed like some criteria for how you evaluate the things that you say yes to, or, you know, sort of, or criteria for what you're going to say no to?
Yes. So if I can't see a link to what I think is my message, then I'll say no. I'll say thank you.
Yeah.
But no. I mean, one was, I was asked to go on a game show. I better not tell you which one it was. It wasn't Strictly. And, you know, I was thinking, why would you think I would want to do this? You might want me to give up a month. Why?
A month?
Mm.
Oh, so it was like a reality show type thing. Ah, okay. Was there any temptation? Did it take you long to formulate a no?
Well, only to as long as it could breathe, you know, like one breath in and no. Or that's not strictly true. I was listening because I was thinking, what am I missing here? You know when something seems incredibly obvious?
Yeah.
And you think, I better just have another quick look at this because I might be missing something.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
So you didn't do that one. No. I did see on the BBC they were saying you were going to meet Anton de Beck.
Oh, yes.
And then they were asking you if you would participate in Strictly if you were asked.
No.
So you wouldn't?
No.
Even though you love the show, wouldn't that be like the perk of all of this is that you get to sort of live out the dream of being on Strictly, you know?
I'm not sure that being on Strictly would be my dream. Now, Star Trek, that would be a different matter.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I really like Anton, as in the persona. I don't know him, the persona on the telly. And I'd love to see him win and then settle down and be a judge. He would not win Strictly with me.
So it's a service to Anton de Beck.
Yes.
If you don't do Strictly.
It is.
Absolutely. So we've just got a couple more minutes before we wrap up. So we have to finish this by me asking to read the standing orders, and then we're going to make it look like you hang up on me. So before we do that, Jackie, I just want to say thank you so much for being on Beyond Busy.
You're welcome.
Where can people, usually I ask people, where can people find out more about you? But it sounds like part of your message here is also about like instigating a bit of curiosity amongst people about being involved in local councils and getting involved in local democracy. So maybe you can just tell people where they can find out more about you, but also, is there anywhere else that you want to point people that you think might be valuable?
I can't think why anybody would want to find out more about me, but I guess Twitter would be a good place. And then you can see my husband and the dogs and the garden. And one or two other things that I hope would be interesting. So you'll find me there at Jackie Weaver. Nice and easy. Great.
And you've become a lot more engaged in Twitter since...
Yes, Rogue, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's just such... Well, for me, it's just such an easy and helpful way of doing two things. One, kind of getting the message out there, because the message comes from an awful lot more people than me. I'm just able to push it out there. But also for gauging people's opinions. That's kind of helpful, because just as I said earlier, when I found myself revisiting how I felt about, women in job situations, it makes me wonder if there are other things I need to challenge in my head as well. Mm. So it's quite a useful place for me to do that. But if you're interested in knowing more about local government at town and parish council level, then check out NALC, that's NALC.gov.uk.
NALC.gov.uk.
That's it.
Great. Obviously, Jackie Weavers, you need to read the standing orders, read them and understand them.
There's no passion there at all, Graham.
Do you want me to do that again?
You've got a long way to go.
I'm not someone that would ever shout in a meeting, so
come on,
really
channel it, Graham. Channel it.
Let me do it. Read the standing orders, read them and understand them.
She's just kicked him out. No, she's kicked him out. Don't. She's kicked him out.